everyone, and thank you for joining us for our media call. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, along with retired military leaders and a school food service director, are going to be here talking about recent attempts to undermine child nutrition standards and the impact that that has on military readiness. Secretary Vilsack and retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Jamie Barnett are here in the studio, and joining us on the phone are retired U.S. Army General William Wallace and School Food Service Director Donna Martin of Burke County, Georgia. Reporters, you know the drill. If you want to ask a question of any of our panel members, please press star 1 on your touchtone pad. And I take it away now with Secretary Vilsack, and he will also introduce our other guests.
Susan, thank you so much, and thanks to everyone who's joining us today. I want to especially thank General Wallace, Admiral Barnett, and Director Martin for their participation in this very important conference call on a very, very important mission and a very important message concerning the future of our children and the future of this country. Nearly a third of our youngsters in America today are at risk of being obese or are in fact obese. 17 million youngsters today live in food insecure homes. This dual challenge of obesity and hunger was one of the principal reasons why 4 years ago Congress passed with overwhelming bipartisan support the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, which really directed the United States Department of Agriculture to establish better standards based on expert directive for our school meal program. For many youngsters in this country today, the school lunch that they receive and or the school breakfast that they receive may be the most nutritious meal they receive, or they may be the only meal they receive at some point in time during the year because of some of the challenges that many American families face economically. So we are deeply concerned about the future of our children, which is why we went to work, followed the experts' advice, and established standards to improve the nutritional value of school meals that are providing lunch to nearly 31 million American students and nearly 13 million youngsters at school breakfast. There are, I think, several benefits to our focus on better nutrition. There's no question that access to meals and better meals will improve educational achievement, and that, of course, will make America much more competitive economically in the future as our youngsters reach their fullest potential. Clearly, this will reduce the significant health care costs that can be attributed to obesity, especially among young people. We're looking at multiple billions of dollars of health care expense that could be avoided and prevented as we deal with better nutrition. And I suspect that several of our guests today will speak about the national security imperative concerning the state of youngsters and the military readiness for this country. We know from recent studies that what we have provided and what we have directed schools to do is working. We know that youngsters are consuming more fruits and vegetables. They have access to whole grains and low-fat dairy. We're seeing reductions of their consumption of fat and sodium and sugar. So we know that what the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids directed us to do is, in fact, working in schools across the United States. I want to take an opportunity to sort of debunk several myths that have been perpetrated during the course of this discussion nationally about the school lunch and school breakfast program. One is that a significant number of schools are dropping out of the school lunch program. In point of fact, it's less than 0.2% of the school districts across the United States are no longer participating in the school lunch and school breakfast program. We're still seeing a considerable involvement by school districts across the United States. Over 90% of school districts in the United States have applied for or received the additional reimbursement by complying with the standards that have been established under the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act. So it's clear that we are continuing to see robust commitment on the part of school districts across the United States to these standards and to this effort. There's also the suggestion that somehow youngsters are throwing food away in school lunch and school breakfast programs. A Harvard study suggested that the level of food waste in schools is not increased as a result of the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act. And in point of fact, if we want to talk about food waste, it's not an issue that is solely the purview of our schools. The reality is that across America, nearly 30% of all food that's produced and prepared is wasted, which is an issue that we are dealing with at USDA. Bottom line, I don't believe that politics and politicians should trump good policy and policy that's established by experts when it comes to the future of our children. We intend to continue to aggressively promote and implement the Hungry Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, because we understand and appreciate at the end of the day the beneficiaries of this will be our children and all of the country. So I'd like to take this opportunity to turn it over to General Wallace first, and then followed by Admiral Barnett, and then Ms. Martin, to discuss their view about this issue. General?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Secretary. I'm pleased to be here as a member of Mission Readiness. We're an organization of more than 400 retired admirals and generals. We champion practices that ensure children are well-educated, healthy, and prepared to serve their nation should they choose to do so. The nation's obesity problem hits us, the military, right in the solar plexus, because 75% of our young adults cannot qualify for military service. Many are disqualified because they're academically unprepared, others because they have a criminal record of some significance, but being overweight and or physically unfit is the leading medical reason people can't serve. In fact, between 2006 and 2011, the U.S. Military Entrance Processing Command reported that over 62,000 young men and women were turned away because of their weight. That's enough people to man 15 United States Army Brigade combat teams. But it isn't just a problem for our recruits. In the past, we've had to discharge as many as 1,200 new enlistees in a single year because of weight problems. We then had to recruit and train their replacements at great cost. We should also know that every year the Department of Defense spends over $1 billion on obesity-related expenses through TRICARE, the health care program that serves service member and retirees and their families. Regardless of your politics, you simply can't argue that a school lunch should be full of salt, sugar, and fat. You also can't deny that schools should set the right example when it comes to eating right. And they can only do that by providing healthy foods both in and out of the school lunch line. Obviously, schools aren't single-handedly responsible for the nation's obesity epidemic. Parents also have a responsibility to provide healthy choices in the home. But the fact is, kids consume up to half of their daily calories in school. We're at a critical juncture. More than 90% of the nation's school districts are successfully implementing these science-based standards, and that's great news for everyone who cares about the health of our students. Our members nationwide are forming a united front to keep the implementation effort on track and to give kids a fighting chance for healthy lives. Because without continued vigilance, we're facing a future in which our kids grow ever more obese. That means huge costs for health care and reduced productivity, and it implies fewer qualified recruits for our military, thus impacting our national security. Now I'd like to turn it over to Rear Admiral Jamie Barnett. He'll provide a bit of context on why we've been involved in this fight so long. Jamie?
Thank you, General Wallace, and Secretary Vilsack, thank you for having us here. As has been noted, we face an epidemic of obesity right now, and the trends show that we have really a tsunami of diabetes and weight-related diseases on the way that really affect our national security. And that starts with our children. The admirals and generals of Mission Readiness formed a battle plan on this issue over 4 years ago. As the Secretary mentioned, in 2010, we came out with a strong united support for the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act. Now, this was a bipartisan and pragmatic way to ensure that kids are eating right in the places where they spend the majority of their days and to bring in scientific standards to do that. The first step was to ensure that school lunch line puts kids on track for healthy futures by offering fresh and wholesome meals. The second step was equally important because it cracked down on the tremendous amount of soda and candy and chips and other unhealthy items kids were consuming at school. In fact, you might be shocked to know that kids were consuming enough calories in school to account for nearly 2 billion candy bars. That weighs more than an aircraft carrier. Now, you've already heard the great news. There's really good news on this. The vast majority of school districts are proving that these standards can be successfully implemented. We recognize that some are facing growing pains, but we've seen that significant action by the Department of Agriculture can help these schools adjust to these challenges. And that's one of the reasons why we want the concerns of schools to be addressed through the USDA's process. Secretary Vilsack and his team can do this, and not really through new legislative language that will throw open the door, and really it's a derailment of the process that's working now to the benefit of our students. I want to reiterate that Mission Readiness will continue to fight against childhood obesity for as long as it takes us to win this battle. We know we have to get these kids when they're young, because research shows that 80% of kids with from ages 10 to 15, if they're overweight in that time frame, they'll become obese by the time that they're 25. And we recognize that schools are just one component of the solution. The steps that they must take are part of a comprehensive action involving parents and communities working together to make help kids have healthy choices. But the bottom line is this. Schools should always be the places where we set the standard of excellence. Continuing the successful implementation of the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act will ensure that all kids have that opportunity to live healthy and productive lives, and the national security aspect of it, they'll have the opportunity to serve our nation through the military if that's the path that they choose. So with that, I would turn it back over to Secretary Vilsack or to Director Martin.
Donna, if I certainly appreciate your perspective for the benefit of our listening audience in terms of what you all are doing in Georgia and how implementation is going in your school area.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And thank you, Secretary Vilsack, General Wallace, and Admiral Barnett for allowing me to do this opportunity to talk to you about all the wonderful things that are going on in school lunch, not only in my county, but in counties all over the country. I don't think that anyone would argue with the fact that nothing is more important than the health and welfare of our children. We as a nation have got to do something to stem the tide of childhood obesity that puts our children at risk for preventable diseases like diabetes and heart disease. I truly feel like the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act does just that. We're not talking about how children are eating in the short term. We are talking about teaching them how to eat for the rest of their lives. This change is worth the price. Our kids are worth it. There's no doubt in my mind that the long-term gains outweigh the short-term challenges. As school nutrition directors, we have known that these changes were coming for many years. Most of us started making these changes many, many years ago. For Burke County, we started making these changes 8 years ago. We have made changes gradually to allow the students and faculty to get used to the changes. We started out adding 10% whole wheat flour to our rolls, and eventually we increased to 51% of the flour being whole wheat. We've now even kicked it up another notch by purchasing locally grown whole wheat flour that is milled just for us and delivered to us monthly. Our whole wheat rolls are absolutely phenomenal and are just one part of the scratch cooking commitment we make in this county. Here in the South, everyone was worried about finding whole wheat grits, but we did it. We bought whole grain grits that are grown locally and milled for us, and we package up these grits and send them to the classroom for breakfast in the classroom. And on those days that we have cheese grits, our participation increases. And we all know that breakfast is such an important part of the day in terms of academic achievement and positive behavior and attendance and tardiness. So when we started offering whole wheat sliced bread, we put one slice of whole wheat on the sandwich and one slice of white bread to get them used to the whole wheat bread. Now the manufacturers make whole wheat white bread for our students that they really, really like. Manufacturers are totally stepping up to the plate to help us make these changes happen. They're gradually reducing the sodium in the food they manufacture and are continually improving the acceptability of their whole grain items. As far as the students are making the adjustments too, and they're picking up and eating the whole grain items very, very well. As far as fruits and vegetables on the tray every day, people say that kids are not eating them, but of course you always have those picky eaters who are not going to pick up anything and don't like anything. But for most of our kids in our county, we find that many of them are picking up too many fruits and vegetables, and we have to actually ask them. Their trays are just piled up with fruits and vegetables. We have to actually ask them to put one or two back. They're getting too many. The key is to offer them a lot of choices, something that they really, really like. So we offer a fresh fruit or vegetable every day that's very popular with our students. Would you believe my students' favorite fruit is kiwi? We also offer grapes, bananas, oranges, six different kinds of apples, watermelon, cantaloupe, plums, and our locally grown strawberries and blueberries we offer a particular hit with the students. We offer a packaged salad every day in all our schools and serve anywhere from 200 to 300 salads a day in each school. We add fresh spinach and romaine lettuce to our iceberg lettuce to get the students used to these newer greens, and we plan to increase the amounts until we are totally serving just romaine and spinach in our salads. We didn't just switch it out. We're doing everything gradually. We make our own low-fat dressing that our students love. Change is hard. Students don't like it any more than we adults do. For the first few weeks after we stop frying french fries, the children complain bitterly. But they don't complain anymore. They pick up those sweet potato fries and those regular french fries that are baked and not fried and gobble them up. We even serve oven-fried okra that's a popular dish here in the South. So we figured out a way to work around all of these things and find foods that the kids like. Eating in one of my lunchrooms is like eating in a cafeteria. We offer at least 3 to 4 entree choices and 5 to 8 fruit and vegetable choices. Other school systems around the country offer even more choices. We also put a popular fruit or vegetable on the menu every day to ensure the students have something that they can pick up for the requirements. We've talked to all our student athletes because we know they need more calories. We make sure that they know they can come join us for breakfast, for lunch, for after-school snack, and for supper. And if they need more calories than that our meals provide them, then they buy an extra entree or a side dish. They have adapted. USDA has listened to us and has made changes in the Act based on the real issues that we are experiencing. They relaxed the grain and meat restrictions and are allowing some flexibility this next year in the whole grain requirement for schools that are having trouble implementing the whole grain pasta requirement. They also relaxed our ability to serve smoothies for breakfast. We make a smoothie with frozen locally grown blueberries, strawberry yogurt, skim milk, and bananas that the children go crazy over. School systems all over the country are doing some creative things in order to improve the health of our children by serving locally grown beef in Montana, or boat to school salmon in Alaska, locally grown asparagus on a whole wheat pizza crust, fruits and vegetables out of their own school gardens, salad bars with all kinds of fresh fruits and vegetables to choose from. We have a fresh fruit and vegetable grant from USDA that has changed how my students eat and especially how my teachers are eating. They now eat fruits and vegetables like broccoli that they never ate before, but they've tried it with the grant and they realize they like it. My students will tell you their favorite fresh fruit and vegetable grant foods are blood oranges, mangoes, pineapple, pomegranate, star fruit, grapples, and muscadines. They are loving the program. The new Smart Snacks guidelines will only continue to enhance the health of our students. Schools should not be fundraising on the backs of our children's health. I do realize that a lot of low, free, and reduced school systems are having a really hard time making ends meet financially because, like me, our health care costs have risen for our faculty and, I mean, our employees. The cost of healthier food is higher. In some areas, participation rates have dropped because of the increased price of meals, and students have not gotten used to the healthier foods. But they will get used to the healthier foods. They are coming around, and our participation rates are increasing. I'm just hoping that superintendents will be supportive of all these positive changes for our students and give the directors time to turn things around. We don't need to go backwards. We need to continue to move forward. Participation rates this year show an increase over last year, and students, over 31 million students, have access to some very trendy, very healthy meals. This is doable. Just give it a little more time. And thank you.
Donna, that was terrific. If it weren't for having to take algebra again, I might go back to school.
We would love to have you.
Just a couple of additional points before we take questions. As a result of the comments from our guests, I want to underscore the point that Donna made, which is that USDA is listening and is providing some flexibility when it is appropriate to do so, and providing school districts additional time and additional resources to be able to deal with some of the consequences of this act. And speaking of resources, the USDA has already provided over $160 million in equipment grants to allow schools to upgrade and modernize their school equipment and their lunch and food service equipment. We've just recently launched the Smart Lunchroom Grant Program, which will provide additional help and assistance to school districts that are having a little difficulty incorporating and implementing all of the changes of the Hungry Free Kids Act. And, of course, we are encouraging more locally and regionally produced items to be sold to schools through our farm-to-school program. So more flexibility, additional resources, technical assistance to assist school districts in making sure that they are comfortable with the new standards. But at the end of the day, I think the point that Donna has made is that with time and with patience, this is working. and it really does not need an overhaul or a fix that Congress or some in Congress are articulating the need for. I want to thank Donna Martin. I want to thank General Wallace. And I want to thank Admiral Barnett for their participation. And with that, we'll be glad to take questions.
Reporters, once again, press star 1 to ask questions. Let's go to Feed Stuff with Jackie Fodka. Jackie.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Can you maybe talk about earlier today the Senate Appropriations did go ahead and approve an amendment from Senator Hoeven and Senator Harkin that strikes a more reasonable approach than the House, some might say. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about that? And also, too, can you give the name and title again of Donna? I didn't hear her full title. Thanks.
It's Dr. Donna Martin. She's the food service director for Burke County, Georgia, school district. We obviously reached out to folks in the Senate to express concern about the steps that the House was prepared to take and did take in committee, suggested that we understand and appreciate the need to be flexible where flexibility is appropriate, certainly what the Senate has, Senate Committee has suggested as a result of Senator Pryor's leadership and Senator Harkin, it's clear that we will work with school districts on the sodium requirement, we'll work with food processing and food companies on the sodium requirement, and that we recognize the issue with wheat pasta. There may very well be other issues which we would be happy to explore. And if it turns out that they are similar to the situation that school districts confronted with reference to pasta, we would be willing to work with school districts to provide flexibility. But providing a waiver and gutting the program is not in the best interest of America's children. So we will be happy to work with the Senate proposal because I think it is consistent with the way in which we've approached the implementation up to this point.
Let's continue with callers on the phone. Patrick Cavanaugh with California Ag Radio.
Yes, thank you, and it's been an intriguing discussion today. Banning sodas in schools. Many states have banned sodas, no sugary sodas, but it didn't seem to be helping because the students seem to be looking for other sugary drinks. Any comments on the need and the success of how banning sodas is lowering the obesity rates?
Well, let me say that we've been working with the beverage industry to change the mix of product available in vending machines in schools. As Admiral Barnett suggested, it is important to send a consistent message, and we are now replacing those full sugared sodas with diet sodas and with water, and with low-cal sports drinks, which are very popular with young people. Honestly, this is not a situation where what has occurred over a period of time, significant time, is going to be changed overnight. We're beginning to see good indications that our efforts in terms of improving nutrition are working, especially among the youngest of our children. And I think over a period of time, if we stick with the program, you're going to see reductions in the obesity rate. You're going to see healthier youngsters. You're going to see fewer people not qualified for military service. But it is not going to be something that's going to occur in a week's time or a month's time or a year's time. It is a generational shift that we are seeing. We didn't get into this situation overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight, but we have to take the first steps towards a better time and a better place for youngsters. And I think the fact that this is being utilized in over 90% of the schools, that we are working collaboratively with the industry to change the mix in vending machines, is reflective of an understanding on the part of industry, on the part of school districts across the United States, that we had to change. And as Don indicated, change can be difficult. There can obviously be pushback to change, but at the end of the day, if we are consistent and persistent with this change, it will make a difference.
Let's go to Evie Blad with Education Week. Evie.
Secretary, is there any discussion, push for, or consideration of flexibility in the SMARC snacks rules in any specific area or the applicability altogether, the implementation this summer?
Well, I think it's important that, as I said earlier, that there be a consistent message sent here. The SMART snack program is not just the vending machines, it's also the a la carte lines. And it's going to be necessary, I think, if we're going to send a message, it has to be consistent. And part of that effort is also to ensure that that we are sending the right message throughout the school day, not only in the selections, but also in the marketing and information and advertising that takes place in schools, that we're not advertising an item that is not available in schools, which would send a mixed message. At this point in time, we obviously are taking a look at people's attitudes and comments about the rule, but we're confident that there's going to be acceptance of this. We're also confident that this isn't necessarily going to dramatically impact and affect the revenue stream for schools. In fact, we believe that the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act has probably increased by about $200 million the amount of revenue that is available to school districts in terms of the overall implementation of the act. So at this point in time, I don't see a specific need for flexibility. But now, as things occur, as situations crop up, we will look at them as we have with pasta, as we looked as we did with the protein issue, and provide enough flexibility without necessarily damaging the overall effect and impact of the act.
Let's go to Georgina Gustin with Congressional Quarterly Roll Call.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. This is for General Wallace. I kind of missed some of the numbers that you referenced. You said 75% of young people don't qualify for the military, and you said because of a criminal record and poor school performance. Did you give is there a percentage just disqualified because of obesity? And then you cited a number of 62,000, and I wasn't sure what the time frame was for that.
Yes, thanks for your question. I can't give you the percentages on that deal with disqualification for academics and criminal records relative to overweight, if that's what you're asking for. That would be the most relevant information. They have to come from the military itself.
Okay.
The number that I cited, 62,000 people turned away because of weight, was reported by the U.S. Military Entrance Processing Command. And the time period was between the years 2006 and 2011.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Five that are disqualified because of obesity.
Well,
hi.
I'm going to put it out here one more time. Reporters, if you'd like to ask a question, please let us know by pressing *1 on your touchtone pad. As we actually, someone jumped on the line. Let's go to Stan Maddox with Farm World.
Yes, just for clarification's sake, what you're speaking about today, does this have anything to do with the 2015 Agriculture Appropriations Bill? I assume it does, but I just wanted to make sure I'm right on this.
It does. What we're talking about are what are called policy riders or to the Appropriations Bill that will appropriate resources starting October 1st for the Department of Agriculture. In the House version, there is...
In what way does it make...
For the capacity of the school district to make the case that they are having difficulty implementing the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, and they seek a waiver from the standards. We think that would be chaotic, it would be extraordinarily difficult to administer, and it would essentially, in my view, gut the opportunity that the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act is presenting of improving the health and welfare of our children. The Senate version, which is passed through committee today on voice vote, basically provides, consistent with the way the department has approached implementation, additional flexibility without necessarily eliminating the need for improved standards. I think both of our guests from the military have made the point that the country's future, whether it's the economic competitiveness of this country of our future, in terms of youngsters having to be able to perform in school at their top, hungry kids who are worried about their self-image are not necessarily going to be in a position to maximize their learning potential. That is going to impact and affect their capacity over time to contribute to America's competitiveness in a global economy that is tough and very competitive. There is no question, there's absolutely no question that obesity carries with it significant health care risk and health care costs that can be avoided and prevented, which will further strengthen our economy.
And I think the General and the Admiral have also made the case that we are seeing a shrinkage of the pool of young people qualified for military service, in part because of their inability to meet minimum health standards for military service. That's not a good thing for the national security of this country. That's why we are so concerned and opposed to what the House has proposed, because it flies in the face of what everyone knows needs to be done.
Now, what the House proposal does specifically want to make meals less healthy.
We have run out of time. Any closing remarks, Secretary Vilsack?
Well, I just simply want to thank Admiral Burnett, General Wallace, and Director Martin for their insight, for their participation. I particularly want to thank Mission Readiness for its consistent and persistent commitment to the nation's children through their strong advocacy. I can't think of a more credible voice for the importance of sticking with this program than the experts who develop these standards from the medical world and our military leaders who understand the real-world implications of obesity. So I want to thank them all for participating.